If you'll come to order, it's 1:35 on Monday, January 21st, 2008. We have a quorum here to conduct business. Senator Huggins is here, Senator Terrio, Senator Wilikowski, myself, Senator French. This is the first meeting of the Judiciary Committee this year, and we brought up HB 151, Indemnity in Public Contracts, to have a look at this bill. And I see the prime sponsor sitting right here, Representative Johnson. Very nice to see you today. Welcome to the Judiciary Committee. Please put yourself on the record, and we'll be eager to hear about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Craig Johnson, Representative of District 28 in Anchorage. Thank you for hearing this bill. Every time I come for this committee, I feel like I'm bringing a knife to a gunfight. Not because I think it's going to be
confrontational.
No, I'm going to clarify it. Not because it's confrontational. It's just I feel like I'm so disarmed. It's a very, very knowledgeable committee, and it sometimes is a knife to a gunfight. It's as close as I can.
Whatever we can do to make you
at ease, appreciate that.
And make
you
welcome. Representative Johnson, I don't know if I can get anyone to disarm themselves. They are entitled by the Constitution to defend themselves, but
yeah. And I do not have a knife, so if that's any consolation.
We have a lot of gun shows up. Three archers.
Welcome. Welcome, Representative Johnson. You're safe here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
HB 151 basically requires a uniform indemnification and hold harmless provision in professional service contracts for public agencies within the state. This bill is sound fiscal policy in or sound public policy in two ways. It ensures that first of all that a fair business practice between public and private sectors. It ensures accountability for all parties involved, and thirdly, it saves money. Current statutes allows for agencies to drop contracts that place liability solely on the shoulders of the design consultant. And one of the big problems with this is they can't get insurance for it. So every time
they the state or they the consultants?
No, they the consultants okay. Cannot get insurance for it. So in essence, every time they bid on these contracts that have this particular type of indemnity clause that this bill fixes, they're putting their company on the line. They can't get insurance for it. Their errors and omissions doesn't cover it. It's a standalone. So basically what you have is companies, very highly qualified companies, making a decision just simply not to bid. Either the job isn't big enough to bid on, and when they do bid on it, they build in a certain contingency, making sure that they are covered. So the result of the state is it costs more money, and we may be driving away some very qualified companies who do not bid on these particular types of projects. HB 151 basically requires that contracts adopt the DOT language that's been in use for a number of years. It's proven effective. It certainly doesn't alleviate anyone from their responsibilities. It just makes the person responsible responsible. And as I said earlier, the design consultant or the design engineer can shoulder the whole burden regardless because of the indemnity and the hold harmless clause in the contract. This basically just adopts DOT language across the state. And allows for a competitive bid and placing the burden when there are mistakes squarely where they belong. It doesn't keep the design engineers from being responsible if they are responsible. If it's shared, it is a shared responsibility. But it keeps them from being solely responsible for things that may or may not be there, they have any control over. And with that, we have online, we have Boyd Morgenthaler, who is the president of Professional Design Council, and Brad Thompson, who is a risk manager with the Department of Administration, to answer any additional questions that you might have.
I know I have a couple questions for Mr. Thompson, but before we let you go, Representative, any questions for the sponsor while we have him here? Senator Terrio.
Yes, there was some testimony last year. I'm sorry, I'm looking for a date here. This is from yourself, Representative. He said one of the unintended consequences from HB 151 is that it may bring in some financial consultants from the Permanent Fund Dividend Group and Alaska Retirement Management Board. That's been corrected?
Yes, sir. That has been corrected. And to my understanding, and I hope unless you hear differently today, there's not been anyone come forward and oppose this bill as it stands right now.
Thank you.
Further follow-up based on that question. Senator Huggins.
If I might, we anticipate some financial savings in the process. Could you describe
how you visualize that?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Huggins, in the event where you are only responsible for your own errors or mistakes, those would not be figured into a bid. If you're in a situation where possibly, and I'll use the Department of Transportation as an example only because they're not doing this. The Department of Transportation, you design something, you build it, they make an error, the designer is still responsible. So that is built into the cost of the contract. The other area that I think there will be savings is we will get more qualified designers. Some people just stay away from some of the projects because they just can't put their company at risk. And I think we may be excluding a certain group of design engineers. And Borden Morgenthaler, who is actually lives this stuff day in and day out, can give you specifics. But I think that we're eliminating a certain competitiveness. I happen to believe that competitiveness will drive the cost down a little bit as long as we can, you know, keep quality design. So I see savings in two areas.
Please. If I might follow up, so how broadly practiced or prevalent is the language across the state now? What do you think?
Through the chair, Representative or Boyd Morgenthaler can answer that probably more accurately in terms of real numbers, but what I can tell you is that since this bill has been introduced, I believe that the Board of Regents of the university have looked at it and said, I can't believe we're even doing this, and have adjusted their language to fit DOT. So just the mere introduction of the bill and pointing it out has driven a lot of people to take the language that DOT uses. And one might say, well, you've got it fixed, why continue? As these purchasing agents and contractors move from place to place to place, seems like this boilerplate language stays in their laptop, and so it can move. So the desire is to fix it so it can't be adjusted in regulation or just someone deciding they want to do that in contract. So a lot of it's already been fixed, so there may not be very many people using it now. But when we started with this, the university still had the indemnification clause. Several other organizations did. And once it was pointed out to them at a Board of Regents level, they said this is not something that makes sense to us. So they have adjusted their policy. And once again, Mr. Morgenthaler can address the day in and day out applications of this. He lives it every day.
Right. Yeah, and just for your information, I mentioned to the chair that MATSU may have this provision. Because it's Martin Luther King and they're not there and can't confer with them, I just would like to be able to close that loop. I mean, I agree with you if it's a good thing, as long as, you know, we hear, you know, what our counter arguments might be.
And we do have the, you know, Brad Thompson from RISC, and I do think the Mad Valley is one of those that still has it in there. And there may be other municipalities that have it in their language. And I would still contend that doesn't make it right.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that at all.
Okay. Just for the purposes of discussion, just right. So you know, it's my intention to hear and hold the bill today so we just get a chance to, on a business day, to hear from anyone else that might be
certainly interested. And I certainly appreciate that, and this committee always does a great job of fleshing things out, so I do appreciate that.
Senator Wilikowski.
Just to, I guess, play devil's advocate on this, aren't we really taking away the right of the state to contract as they will? In other words, I guess if the state can get a design firm to contract to assume liability, that's a good thing for the state, I would think. And the state doesn't have to pay a future claim, perhaps. So it would seem to me that, I guess, just from a, you know, again, devil's advocate, aren't we taking away the right of the state, here to enter into a free contract, number one, and aren't we potentially increasing the cost of the state in the future? By now the state is assuming a liability that it once had given off to someone else.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, that is certainly true, but that would only be the case if the state made the mistake. If the state didn't make the mistake, we will not be spreading that burden. And I happen to be a person that believes in accountability, and be it the individual that makes the mistake, or the state that makes the mistake, or the individual company that makes the mistake, they should be accountable. I think what we're doing now is running afoul of what I consider good business practices, is we're allowing people to hide under the umbrella of, well, we don't need to really work on it that hard because they're responsible anyway. I'm not saying that happens. I'm saying that's possible. We don't have our name on the line. We don't have any accountability. We don't have any financial, and that just might make things better. And yes, if the state makes a mistake, the state should be accountable, just like an individual should be held accountable or a company should be held accountable in the event of that error. So you're absolutely right. I don't believe it will drive up cost in that I think we're going to get a better product. I think it's going to maybe force the departments that don't utilize this. And like I say, the Department of Transportation does, and they do 90% of the construction for state buildings. So, yes, I think your assessment is absolutely right, and I don't see that as a bad thing.
Why don't we turn now to Mr. Thompson and ask him a couple questions about how this might work in the real world. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr.
Mr. Thompson, welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record.
Thank you. My name is Brad Thompson, Director, Division of Risk Management, Department of Administration. Risk Management acts as we administer the state's self-insurance program, excess insurance, but one part of our practice is the guidance and creation of policy as far as contractual transfers of risk. And the terms of this bill today is addressing and trying to apply for construction related only. And to Senator Terrio, your question earlier about the permanent fund, that was the narrowing of this bill application to just construction related professional service contracts. So it has answered that question. The state's risk management guidance to DOT and other state agencies that contract for construction, we have applied what we characterize as Appendix D. It's a standard form that's been used by the state for, I looked at the form, it's a 98 version, but I believe it was even earlier than that. So we have used this comparative fault allocation for construction-related professional service agreements for a long time, and it's
At DOT.
At DOT and other state agencies. So risk management gives guidance to DOT, Fish and Game, other agencies that might have a construction-related contract on the street. We do not give guidance to the railroad, the University of Alaska, or other local municipal agencies. Many do follow our format or our lead in application. It's standard language that is often used. Some do not, and this bill addresses it to make it a uniform application throughout all public entities as defined in the bill.
In my understanding, if I just were to state kind of the thrust of the bill, which I see on lines like 8, 9, and 10, 11, and 12 of the page 1, if the consultant makes a mistake, the consultant's responsible for his or her mistake. The state makes a mistake, the state's responsible for their mistake. But you can't sue the state if the consultant makes a mistake, right? I mean, in plain English, that's kind of the way I get this bill.
It's a comparative allocation. Typically, if there is a third-party lawsuit, it'll name both the state. And again, it's been our business practice to use this language already. But if there is a third-party claim, typically they'll name the state and perhaps name the independent party that may have a comparative responsibility. We may bring them in. We would tender to that responsible party per the terms of this contractual statement to also pay their share if there is comparative allocation by that independent design agency.
But again, if they haven't made a mistake, then
we would not bring them in. It would
right.
be solely ours.
Right.
And if it's shared,
but by the
shared.
Same token, if the state didn't make a mistake, it's all on the consultant. They've agreed to indemnify, defend and hold harmless the public agency, the state, from claims of liability for the negligent acts, errors, or omissions of the consultant.
Correct. And they are able to obtain a professional malpractice policy that provides them that protection.
And it's
an insurable
risk.
That's
what they bring to the party, so to speak, is their professional malpractice
insurance. One of our criteria for selecting counsel or outside professionals is that they have to carry insurance to be able to meet the obligation of the indemnity.
So it's a fairly standard comparative fault statute.
This statute portrays application of the state standard form for all public agencies within the state. Yes.
Those are my questions. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. I'm still kind of in the trying to understand exactly what this does phase. The note that I have here says that this This language insulates public agencies from liability for their own negligence by unfairly transferring it to design consultant companies. That's a statement that's been made in support of this. As a reason we need to change it. Is that what's happening right now? Do you feel we're unfairly transferring liability to design consultant companies?
Again, the state's practice is language this is patterned after. So the DOT version that's been used as, you know, the state as a label has been broadly used today. But the university has had consultant agreements that has had that used language much stronger than a comparative allocation. It was a total transfer of any and all risk associated with that work, period. So that the university was able to tender the defense of any claim because of that contractual language.
Just if I could follow, Mr. Chair. So basically what was happening in the past, for instance, the design consultant comes in, builds a project, and the university says to that design company, if anything goes wrong, even if it's our fault, you're responsible for it. Is that an accurate statement?
In the language that was being applied, I believe there was situations that the university could transfer any and all claims to that design consultant.
Do you have any knowledge where there was ever a lawsuit and the liability was transferred completely to the design company?
I'm administer the state's, and I really can't respond to the university's situation.
Okay. What is the state, and I guess I'm just trying to figure out kind of pros and cons here. I see the potential con to the state for doing this is we may have to pay some more liability costs, that we may have to pay some more lawsuit costs that we otherwise wouldn't have to pay.
Well, in response to that, I think that the language of this stipulation is a comparative allocation. Without any contract term addressing that allocation, under our law today, it's pure comparative. So if you were brought in as the owner of a project for a third-party claim, even without this contractual term, you would be able to third-party in any other responsible party for their comparative fault. This contract term allows you to do so much more expeditiously because of the terms. You can present the claim and say, if it is only the other party's responsibility, hold us harmless. And if it is a comparative, we'll share in the defense and we'll share and pay our each individual responsibility.
So if I can just jump in, just so I'm following along so far, fair to say that this is not a change in the law, this is just a codification of existing common law into a statute as far as comparative fault goes.
As applied to professional services within construction-related contracts, yes.
So if I could, what's the necessity of putting it in statute?
Well, I think as the sponsor had submitted that in application, some entities, public entities, are off with requests for proposals or seeking protections beyond what the law would provide without such a clause. And that contractual term is onerous to some independent professionals because they are not able to ensure that. So they truly are assuming a tremendous responsibility that perhaps they would not be able to ultimately meet if it became a huge economic burden.
If I can jump in again, because I feel like the scales are falling from my eyes about this bill. It's just taking me a while to get a grip on it. You can't go out in the market and say, I need to get liability insurance for something the state might do. Right? If I'm a professional design consultant, you know, it's just hard. As an insurance salesman, I probably wouldn't sell you that insurance. I wouldn't agree to that deal.
A malpractice policy typically excludes contractual liability. So when you as an independent professional, as a medical, legal, or design engineer, you would have no ability to extend coverage for contractual liability except, and this is the exception, that which would be applied under the normal law anyway, which is, again, your own comparative fault. So you are insured for your own comparative responsibility, but you are not able to obtain insurance if you sign a document that obligates you to protect the owner, in this case, of something beyond what you would be normally at a trier of fact would allocate to you in the ultimate verdict.
But I guess just, you know, kind of go back to the question I asked Representative Johnson. I mean, if I'm a fiduciary of the state as a legislator, why would I want to pass this bill? I mean, what's the advantage for the state to passing this bill? We can just let the market go and do its thing. And if we can't get design consultants to come in because we have too onerous terms on our contracts, then we'll lighten our design. We'll lighten our contracts. But if we can get a design professional to agree to assume our liability, then that's what the market will bear, and that's a good thing for us, isn't it?
Well, again, it's hard for me to respond because, again, our business practice has been to use these terms for decades. And so you're really asking for those that have not used the common or the business, the state of the market in the business environment, if the balance, perhaps, in the contractual requirement. But the argument is there are those that won't even apply to respond to the request for proposal with a complete indemnity obligation.
I think the person who may be able to answer that question is Mr. Morgenthaler, who is, I think, waiting on the line. He may have some information about the relative power of the two entities, the design community and the state's ability to transfer risk. Mr. Morgenthaler, are you on the line?
I am. Thank you.
Welcome to the Judiciary Committee. Please put yourself on the record, tell us who you're affiliated with, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Well, thank you. My name is Boyd Morgenthaler. It's Morgenthaler. I am the chairman of the AE Contracts Committee for the Alaska Professional Design Council.
Mr. Morgenthaler, just one second. You're coming through a little quietly. I'm not sure if we can raise the volume or get you closer to the mic, but I need a little more volume.
That's okay. Is that better?
We're making some adjustments here. Try it now.
Can you hear me now?
I think that's just going to have to do. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm having problems here, too, because it sort of cuts in and out on your end.
It's our state-of-the-art capital.
I'll do my best to talk into the mic, and I'll repeat myself if you request. The Alaska Professional Design Council is a consortium of professional societies that ultimately represents about 5,000 registered professional architects, engineers, and land surveyors in Alaska. I'd like to thank Mr. Thompson for doing such a great job of describing how this bill works and the dynamics. I couldn't have said it as well. The problem that we have here is that some agencies in the state, and I'm not talking about DOT, which does most of quote the state of Alaska's design work. I'm talking about quasi-governmental agencies like the Alaska Railroad, the University of Alaska, the boroughs. The Matanuska-Susitna Borough has been problematic, but you can find examples of different indemnification language all through the state, the different cities, the different school districts. Now, some of these agencies actually depart from the common law considerably, and they use the, and I say they, and I'm not talking about boards of regents, and I'm not talking about assemblymen or leaders or people in the community. I'm really talking about contracting officers who have the power to force a consultant to coerce a consultant to effectively enter into a take-it-or-leave-it contract. And several of these agencies have gone so far as to ask the consultant to take on all of the responsibility for liability except for the agency's sole negligence. So in a circumstance where the agency is 99% at fault, but the consultant had some 1% involvement, the consultant would still be required to pay 100% of the cost because there's no apportionment of costs on a comparative fault basis in these contracts. Now, we've made considerable progress over the years. We had a contract from the Alaska Railroad about 2 years ago that said that the consultant would have to indemnify and hold harmless the Alaska Railroad from and against all claims and actions asserted by a third party or parties resulting from the services performed. So we weren't even required to just protect against the actions of the Alaska Railroad, but they even brought in third parties. In other words, we were their insurance company for any and all claims that they might have had on the project. We addressed this with the railroad over a course of discussion that took a month or two. They came to realize the unfairness of that position, and they adopted the state DOT language. Last January, we presented this to the University Board of Regents, who had similar one-sided language. And over a course of two or three months, they reviewed it. The regents essentially agreed with that they should have a fair business approach. And they have changed all of the contracts in the university system to language which is essentially the same as the DOT language. In the Matsu Borough, they had one-sided language for about a decade. In around 2000 or so, we worked with them over a period of a year, and we got them to change to the DOT language. But then back in at the end of 2006, early 2007, they got a new contracting officer, and he basically just took us backwards and back to the one-sided language that we were responsible to indemnify them for everything. So at this point, my own company has got contracts with the Matsu Borough. Some contracts are DOT language contracts, and some are one-sided contracts. There's even claims. I guess I can't discuss that, but there are situations where two different consultants essentially are brought into the same lawsuit. One of the consultants has DOT-style language. The other one has one-sided language. So it really becomes an unfair situation. The agencies in this case are really like an 800-pound gorilla, because most consulting companies are relatively small, and we rely on providing professional services to state and governmental agencies. And as we compete for these services, if the agency says, here's our one-sided language, take it or leave it, ultimately there's somebody that will take it. Now, the guy that usually takes it is the new kid on the block, the young engineer or architect that's been out of school for a few years. He doesn't have anything to lose, so certainly he can sign that he's going to take on all the responsibility, because ultimately it's a shallow promise.
But the more Mr. Morgenthaler, I think the term my law school professors used to use about guys who just got out of school with a lot of debt was they're judgment proof.
Judgment proof, exactly. And that's exactly what happens. This is that a lot of, when it gets to that, in that situation, the consultants that sign the contracts are judgment proof, so that it's a false security on the sense of the agency. And the companies that have been around for a longer period of time, my company is an example. We've been around 26 years. I've walked away from several projects. In fact, I told the Board of Regents that after 26 years of working for the Regents, I couldn't work with them anymore. And well, it's real simple. I mean, I'm in my late 50s. I cannot afford to start over, and I'm not going to roll the dice just for a project. I can't afford to do it. And there's many AE firms that feel exactly the same way that I do. So we walk away from nice, large projects because of bad indemnification language.
Mr. Morgenthaler, let me just stop because I understand, I think, pretty well the situation in the bill, and ask the committee if there's any questions for you while we've got you on the line. And it looks like the answer is no. I really appreciate you. Was there something else on that I cut you off from saying, sir?
No, I think that more or less summarizes it. This is the most important piece of legislation for architects and engineers in the state. There's absolute unity amongst the AE community. This is really a big deal for us, and we really hope that you'll help us just bring a level playing field back to us when we sign contracts with government agencies.
I think Senator Wilikowski does have a question.
In these contracts that you do with the state agencies, or that some people do with the state agencies, where you have to fully indemnify them, is there a requirement that you provide proof of insurance to be able to do that?
There is, and I actually have contacted insurance companies in Anchorage, Juneau, and Fairbanks. They ask for insurability, and we can get professional AEs can get professional liability, but all professional liability policies only cover the consultant's negligence. So to the extent that we're negligent, we're insured. But for any other reason, they do not cover contractual requirements. So I can contractually tell an owner that we're going to cover his liabilities, but I can only get insurance for my own negligence. So beyond comparative fault, I'm on my own. There's no insurance that is available for me to insure you. I cannot buy insurance that will cover your liability, your personal liability.
Are you aware of lawsuits where designers have gotten sued and had to pay what would otherwise have been the state's responsibility?
I can't honestly say that I am. I've been in a lawsuit where that's been alleged, but it hasn't completed. And knock on wood, fortunately for us, we've never been in a lawsuit of that nature. So my personal experience, no.
Are you aware of anyone in the profession who has been?
I have no specific knowledge. And one of the problems is that most of the times when somebody gets in a lawsuit, they zip up pretty tight. And oftentimes things are settled, and the settlement says that you can't tell anybody what happened. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Morgenthaler, thanks for being here. Why don't we do this? It is a holiday today. We're going to let Senator Wilikowski can do some more checking into those lawsuits. I know Senator Huggins has one question. I'll just put on the record, I made contact with a former colleague of mine from the DA's office who makes, I think, a fairly good living, more or less suing the state, DOT, and he was perfectly comfortable with this language. He's lived with this language for years and thinks it's fair, you know, fair all the way around. But with that, and with nothing else to come before the committee, we'll stand in adjournment.
Thank you.